This season of The Intersection could not have been made without Google. More specifically, Google Docs, Google Mail, Google Maps, Google Scholar, Google News, Google Books, Google's YouTube, Google Bikes, and Google Search. These products were integral to the production of this podcast. But to be clear, I received no financial support from Google. In fact, they refused to talk to me. The views expressed by their employees and subcontractors are their own and do not represent the views of Google. And now, a new episode of The Intersection.
You could not imagine the way it was then based on looking at it now.
There are two houses left in that entire neighborhood.
There's not enough left for people to even believe they're in the same place.
I think there's not going to be anything left out there pretty soon except Google.
You can't just forget the history of a town. You have to understand it in order to build up from there.
Welcome back to The Intersection. I'm here at the corner of Space Park Way and North Shoreline Boulevard in Mountain View. If I didn't know better, I'd say I'm standing in a typical suburban office park in anywhere USA. It's difficult to imagine what was here before and what might be coming, but everything we see, the gym, that strip mall, the office buildings, and yes, even the old dive bar across the street, will be gone within a decade, and in some cases, within the year. Before another layer of history is all but erased, we need to look at how we got here. Because without some link to the past, a place becomes disposable. The only thing that matters is what comes next. And this is not just any intersection. We're in the middle of Google's headquarters, arguably the center of the tech universe. So this corner, it has a story all its own.
I grew up here. We didn't even have a name for the neighborhood. I mean, we just said the other side of the freeway. It wasn't even a freeway, the other side of Bayshore. The people in town only knew it as that's where they went to go to the dumps. It was a country neighborhood. My name is Karen McGow. I was born in 1948, moved to the neighborhood in 49, and I lived there and basically until I went away to college.
Karen now lives one town over in Sunnyvale, but she grew up just a block and a half away from our intersection. Back then, this area was known as the Valley of Heart's Delight, so named for its endless rows of fruit trees.
We see the trees over there? It was all like that.
And now?
There's a Starbucks right around the corner from where I used to live, and I never would have imagined that. And we would play in the street. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? It wasn't even paved. Now it's a busy place, isn't it? So many Google buses and traffic getting here.
Today, Karen's driving me around her old neighborhood. There's not much left from her childhood, but she wants to show me one reminder of what was here.
There's a sign coming up here.
And where are we right now?
So this is the corner of Shoreline and Space Park, which didn't exist. There was no Space Park.
Here's a fun fact. This street was added in the early 60s. Its name is a nod to NASA's research center at Moffett Field, which you can see from right here.
That's where my dad worked.
And Shoreline Boulevard? Well, it used to be called Sterling. That changed in the 80s after Shoreline Park opened right down the street.
Whoa, careful, careful.
Yeah, I see him. Okay, here's where the Ringsdorf house was. Here's the sign.
Wow.
Ringsdorf house built 1867. So it's that right here with fields all around it. And luckily, Mountain View decided to save it. Have you seen the house?
No.
I'll take you out and show you.
The oldest house in Mountain View, built right on this corner, which is now occupied by the repair shop for Google's bike program. This house is the connection between the neighborhood's agricultural past and technological future.
At least they've left lots of pretty trees.
Sure.
In most communities, homes like this are gone, replaced by big box retailers or McMansions. Here in North Bayshore, amid the assortment of drab office buildings, this house is a testament to what's unique about this area and what shaped it. Well, this seems like a good time for a quick history lesson. Cue that old-timey music. Like most of the Bay Area, this corner and region were originally settled by native tribes. Then it was discovered by Spain, which later ceded it to Mexico after Mexico won its independence. That didn't last long. Just two decades later, the United States captured this land during the Mexican-American War. If you want to learn more, Google it. In the meantime, we're going to visit the home of one of the earliest American settlers in Mountain View. Okay, listeners, this is a historical site, so don't you touch anything and don't you embarrass me.
Hi, welcome. Are you here to see the house? Well, come on in. We're having a tour right now. We'll start at the front and work our way back. I'm Martha Wallace. I'm a docent here at Ringsdorf House. This house was built in 1867 by Henry Ringsdorf. Henry came here in 1850 from Germany. He had heard about the California Gold Rush and decided to come and get rich. He did not go looking for gold, because by 1850 there were already tens of thousands of gold miners already up in the hills.
Instead, Henry worked on local farms until he saved up enough money to buy his own land. This house was part of a 163-acre plot that he bought for dollars an acre, a bargain even then. Today, this land in the heart of Silicon Valley is worth, wait for it, over $2 billion. Henry was just one in a wave of big-dreaming immigrants lured to this area by the promise of riches. He ended up making his fortune building a landing for ships right down the street. Mostly, the ships transported hay from the surrounding fields to San Francisco.
Hay was the gasoline of the time.
In many ways, history repeated itself when the electronics and technology industry settled right here. Once again, a group of big dreamers were attracted by the relatively cheap, plentiful, and undeveloped land. They went on to start some of the most innovative businesses in history. And it's no wonder some early tech billionaires were called 49ers, an allusion to the enterprising gold miners that came before.
So next we'll go into the music room. This photograph is of the grandson, Perry Ascom, who was the last family member to live in the house, to own the house. He was an actor and a singer. He sang on stage and in movies. We found some of his songs, and I'm going to let you hear him sing one. So in 1959, Perry sold the house to a land company. They rented it for 10 years, and it was vacant for 10 years, at which point it looked like this.
Karen remembers the house just like it looks in this photo, with peeling paint, boarded up windows, and a sagging roof.
It was starting to decline a bit when I walked by it on my way to school. One of the families still lived there, and so, of course, we would make up stories about it. He was a retired opera singer, he was a recluse, the house was haunted. In fact, I did read later on that people did think it might be haunted. And it was later, after he had moved out, and the house was just left empty. And at that point, the Hells Angels moved into the house. They kind of wrecked it, because they actually took their motorcycles up and down the stairs.
Well, that concludes the tour. And before you go, be sure and sign the guest book, okay?
All right.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
Good
I really appreciate it. Okay. I appreciate your
thank
time.
Thank you. Hope it comes out well.
So should we walk somewhere or drive somewhere? Should we drive by your house?
Yeah, let's drive by my house.
We drive along streets lined with massive old redwoods and setback office buildings with gurgling fountains out front. We pass Googlers on colorful bikes, a food truck fair in a parking lot, and the fenced-in construction site for phase one of Google's soon-to-be mega campus. Its wildly futuristic design is a sharp contrast to what was here.
Right in here was Dairy Farm.
So where was the dump?
Right out here and to the right. And that's what it was called, the dump. So there were houses on this side and on this side. No parking lots. And we're coming up to my house. There were hundreds of houses like this out here, and now two left.
Hundreds?
Oh, yeah, because right on my street here, there'd be, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Just right here on this little section, and all those streets we went up and down had houses. There were lots of families with kids. I mean, there were enough to fill a school. And there were people of all nationalities. And a lot of them were immigrants. A lot of them were, you know, either first or second generation. Next door to me was Puerto Rico. On this side, they were from Mexico. There were Italian across the street. Now it's a Google. It was an actual neighborhood. It's a pepper tree right here. That was my favorite tree.
Karen pulls out a fading color photo of her house from the 60s.
Just kind of curious. It looks so different with that big building there.
This house is one of the millions of single-story ranch houses built mid-century in the United States. It's low-slung, beige stucco, with an attached garage and not much adornment.
It was a wonderful place to grow up because it was, you know, it was very rural, no sidewalks. And behind us was a truck patch, they called it. It was a vegetable farm. I mean, there was one point where we had a cow.
Now, there's a couple of mouthy attack dogs guarding the place. The backyard has been paved over, and it's home to a few beat-up RVs and a trailer. The property's pretty much surrounded by parking lots.
Do you remember when they started to develop this?
It was a teen, early 60s. And Aero Development, that was the very first, you know, company building that went in. And they were only two doors down from us, and they were building rides for Disneyland. We could watch them build roller coasters.
Wow.
Yeah, it was fun. And then the drive-in was built in 1964. That was a big change.
Show starts in 1 minute.
It was right at our back fence where the vegetable farm was. So at that point, I was a teen. And to be able to sit out in our backyard and watch movies was incredible.
And now, on with the show.
Eventually, my dad got a speaker. He talked to the manager, and he put a picture window in the back of the garage, and they actually ran the speaker into the garage so we could sit in the garage and see the screen.
Any movies that you remember seeing?
Lots of Elvis Presley movies. Blue Hawaii, Viva Las Vegas. So behind us is a drive-in. Roller coasters are two houses down. There's a little dive bar on the right. And a little store on the corner. Just a little tiny neighborhood store where you could go and buy bread and milk. And now it's about it.
What happens after that?
Nothing for a long time. It's all fairly recent and fast.
It may have looked like nothing was going on, but two things were happening that would radically change North Bayshore. The four-lane Bayshore Parkway of Karen's youth was being transformed into an eight-lane expressway. 101 would ultimately disconnect the neighborhood from the rest of town. At the same time, Mountain View officials and city planners were sketching out a new North Bayshore. You see, city administrators didn't see Karen's neighborhood as a fun rural paradise. They saw something that needed rehabilitation.
My name is John O'Halloran. I was city manager of Mountain View from 1958 to 73. Bayshore was the dump for 100 years for Mountain View. And you would go out there and see all kinds of junk, pipes, refrigerators, seagulls all over and all that stuff. In addition to that, there were a few little ramshackle houses. There were no good streets. Some of the area flooded at times. So all of us knew that there was a problem out there. That's why we had decided something's got to be done out here before it gets any worse.
Ken Alsman was one of the people called upon to fix the quote-unquote problem. He started as a city planner in Mountain View in 1968, just as the Bay Area was coming down from the summer of love. The backlash against the counterculture was already brewing by then, and there was less and less tolerance for disorder and the unconventional.
When I came in, North Bayshore was still kind of the Wild West. There are cockfights going on. This guy lives in a teepee. If you wanted to gamble, you could do that. There may have been some ladies who were making money in their own way. You could do almost anything you wanted to out there. So what we did there was to say, okay, we want to see this improved. And so how do you do that?
Well, the initial vision, I think we all sat down and we decided that a regional park sounded great. You know, that we didn't have a lot of parks at the time. I liked the idea of a golf course. It would bring in revenue to the city.
But it was like a grand idea that nobody had any sense of how to ever get there.
They began planning what would become Shoreline Park in the late 60s. In addition to that golf course, there would be a lake for boating, a children's zoo, hiking and riding trails, and a sports arena.
We printed up a map of that showing this nice area right in the middle of this dump. When I showed it to the council, they said, where are you going to get the money for this?
You see, transforming a dump into a park is one thing, but this area flooded regularly. So they also needed to raise the land near the bay about 20 feet.
So we knew we had to get a lot of dirt, and that would have cost us billions. And I don't know who came up with the idea of San Francisco garbage, but we heard they were looking for a place to put their garbage. They were talking about trucking it to Nevada.
That's right, kids. San Francisco had run out of room in their own dump, so they ultimately paid for the honor of trucking their garbage to Mountain View. And Mountain View built the park and amphitheater right on top of it. But what about the rest of North Bayshore? What about our corner?
I don't know if anybody else mentioned it, but there were proposals for a Marine World. There was a proposal for two racetracks, one for horses and one for automobiles.
There was also talk of a state college, hotels, and a complex of 18-story office towers. But none of that happened. Like most of the valley, Mountain View's population exploded between 1950 and 1970, growing from less than 7,000 people to more than 50,000. Of course, the land became more and more valuable, and North Bayshore's farms and dumps were the blank canvas that developers and planners craved. In 1975, the city released a plan for the neighborhood. A few things stand out. Traffic was already an issue. The plan identified it as, quote, the most significant limiting factor affecting future development. And there's no mention of the farms and orchards that once dominated the so-called Valley of Heart's Delight. By that point, the area had been rechristened Silicon Valley. Yes, the name refers to the material used to make computer chips, but it also recognizes hundreds of new companies that were part of the valley's first tech boom. Mountain View's plan for the neighborhood assured investors and builders that the city was committed to redeveloping the area. The marketplace and a boom mentality took over from there.
And it started going crazy. At one point, you could buy an acre of land on Shoreline Boulevard for $30,000 an acre. The next year, maybe it was $120,000 an acre. A year or two later, it might be $900,000 an acre. Because of what was happening in there, the land became fairly valuable.
The Rengsdorf house on the corner, the one that Karen walked by every day on the way to school, was now worth millions. Or to be more precise, the land underneath it. But what to do with the now dilapidated structure?
At that point, I had gotten it on the National Register. I hadn't told anybody, but I got it on the National Register and went down to the City Council and said, hey, you got this building, National Register, historic building, and, you know, let's preserve it. I don't know.
I'm curious, why did you want to preserve it?
It gives the community character. It gives it a center that it wouldn't have otherwise. Anyway, the Rengsdorf house sat there for years and years until it just became vandalized. So we finally, the staff said, you know, we recommend that we demolish the building. It's just a liability. And so we went to the city council and they said, demolish the Rengsdorf house? No, we need to do something.
A group of passionate residents came together, worked with the city, and bought the house for a dollar. There were already plans to redevelop the land, so the crumbling house had to be moved.
And so then that was the next saga with that thing. They actually did move it out the shoreline while they're still filling the park with the garbage and all.
It took 15 years to finish the park. During that time, Ken Alsman and his team worked on a more precise plan for the rest of the neighborhood.
We saw much of the area being for residential use. You know, here we had this 500-acre park, and we said, housing, park, makes sense, you know? And I remember working for probably a year on plans to build a complete neighborhood with employment and housing and schools and services and with retail shopping and open space and all of that. And this was a time when jobs housing balance was a real issue in town. So we thought it was a slam dunk. It was going to get done. But the city council at the time said, look, nobody else is building housing. Why should we?
Mountain View was one of the few places in the area that already had apartment buildings. And its wealthier neighbors, Palo Alto and Los Altos, were resisting building more and denser housing, even though it was badly needed. Mountain View felt taken advantage of.
So they'd said, no, we'd like to see it be industrial. And we sat down the next day and said, let's give them the best version of this that we possibly can. So if you're looking around in North Bay Shore area right now, you see something which is heavily landscaped, big trees and paths that meander through that area. I'm pretty proud of what's out there now.
The city council's decision proved to be pivotal for Mountain View and financially savvy. At the time, industrial development came with a huge influx of tax revenue, whereas residential development brought in less revenue and required the city to pay for things like schools, parks, and libraries. And in the years to come, the new business park would attract some of the most successful tech companies in the world, including Adobe, Netscape, Silicon Graphics, Sun Microsystems, Intuit, and Microsoft.
And then Google came in, and that was the beginning of Googleville.
So do you remember early Google days?
When they were really small, the mayor and the city manager and myself did a corporate visit and talked to them about, you know, what their plans for the future were, you know, what's going on, what's working, what's not working.
That was 1999. Google had just 40 employees. Kevin Duggan was Mountain View city manager at the time. He remembers the visit too.
It was a busy day for me. So I said, where are we going today? And they said, we're going to Google. And I said, what's Google? And they said, well, they have this kind of search engine thing. We went out there and met Larry and Sergey, and they were telling us about their business. And they had free food all over the place. And I think they had the former Grateful Dead chef. So it seemed like they were doing interesting work. But frankly, did I come away from that saying, this is one day going to be one of the largest company in the world? No. And I couldn't tell you at what point you realize you have an earth-shaking company in your community. Maybe when the name of the company becomes a verb. It's probably the equivalent in Silicon Valley of finding gold.
I asked Ken Alsman to imagine an alternate reality in which North Bay Shore does become a residential neighborhood.
We would not have been the center of Silicon Valley. I think it would have been a wonderful part of the community. It would have had a much better jobs housing balance than it has now. It would have been different.
To be fair, when the city council made the decision to go industrial, it reflected what much of the public wanted. Bob Lawrence, who was Mountain View's chief planner before Ken Alsman, understands this dynamic.
Remember, this was still not too long after the war. At that time, everybody wanted a car. And they wanted their suburbia and just all single family dwellings. And you can only do what the people want to do. And that's the way it should be. But unfortunately, like a lot of things in democracy, it's slow and cumbersome and takes eons to really arrive at the solution.
Since then, the imbalance between jobs and housing has only gotten worse in Silicon Valley. And it's particularly out of whack in North Bay Shore, where there are less than 400 housing units and more than 20,000 jobs. Many Mountain View residents and the local tech companies, including Google, want more housing, especially affordable housing. The tech companies are also clamoring for more office space so they can stay and grow. The city council is caught in the middle. The only thing everyone seems to agree on is the need for density and to revamp North Bay Shore once again. But this time, instead of clearing open fields or turning a dump into a park, they will tear down the suburban office park that Ken Alsman and his team built.
It hurts.
What hurts?
The fact that they would tear it down so soon. We worked so hard to get what's out there now, you know. You took ownership. I took ownership of what was taking place out there. I can't remember ever saying, oh, this will be here for 50 years or something like that. But my assumption was they were going to be there for quite a while. But, you know, there was no sense of the power of companies like Google. It was just incomprehensible.
In In a town and region built on innovation, there has always been the pull of the new and the next, a preference for the shiny over the scuffed. City planner Ken Allsman was trying to build a better North Bayshore. And to his credit, he advocated for a plan that's eerily similar to what's being discussed four decades later. But in the end, those with the power to decide couldn't imagine a future where people wanted to live close to work, and some even chose not to own a car. And now, 150 years after Henry Rangsdorf built his house on this corner, Mountain View is once again at what some call a crossroads and others call a crisis. Change is coming, but what will the future look like? Will it make Mountain View more livable and prosperous or less? That's the thing about the future. It's really hard to predict. Next time, we'll find out why some Googlers are choosing to live in a mobile home park and learn about the origins of the term trailer trash.
I mean, I myself would have probably never looked at mobile homes, but my husband is from Brazil. And in Brazil, there's not the same stigma.
In the next episode, we'll spend some quality time with the residents of Santiago Villa. In the meantime, you can catch up on last season and make sure you don't miss any new episodes. Just subscribe to The Intersection on your podcast app of choice. And if you've already subscribed and you like what you've heard, please rate us on iTunes. It's crowded out there and it really helps new listeners find us. The Intersection is a production of KALW. Ben Trefney is the editor with an assist from Ashley Ann Krigbaum. Lucy Kang is the associate producer. It's engineered by Chris Hoff and me. The theme song and music is by Eric Pearson. Special thanks to radio goddess Lisa Morehouse, historians Candace Bowers and Nick Perry, and the ladies of St. Mark's Avenue. Projects like this don't just happen. This one was made possible with a grant from the San Francisco Arts Commission and from Cal Humanities, a nonprofit partner of the NEH. Until next time, I'm David Boyer, and this is The Intersection.